you were at sea for 10 days and you were sick in the hold the whole time? You didn't go up on...
I went up the last couple of days. I was up on deck. By that time I recovered.
Do you have any memories of the ship crossing?
Of the last 2 days, yeah.
But before that, you don't remember anything?
Oh yeah, I remember.
And were you able to eat anything?
Hardly. Later on I ate dried bread. They had a special kind of real dry bread. I could eat that and enjoy it. They call it Saharis. I remember seeing the other immigrants, you know, on the ship. We have Italians, and Jews, Polacks, and Russians, various nationalities, Germans. I like to see, to watch the different kinds of people. We passed the New York Harbor, and we stopped at Castle Garden. We saw the Statue of Liberty. But we didn't get off at the Castle Garden. We stayed on ship.
At Ellis Island?
At Ellis Island. A lot of people got off. We stayed on. And we landed at Baltimore. Down there they held us for a couple of days. And my mother was terribly worried. I don't know what held him up. She didn't have enough money to show or something. I don't know how they mailed in more money. You had to have a certain amount of money with you to show the immigration authority. Mm-hmm. And she didn't have quite enough. So they held us in the quarters that they had, detention quarters, till she received the money order. Then they just let us go. We got on the train and we got to Pittsburgh on the way to Detroit. Mm-hmm. At Pittsburgh we had to change trains. We were very hungry, all of us, you know. And, but we had to wait, stay in the depot and wait for the train. A stranger, a youth, came by and got into conversation with my mother. And he said, sure, let him come in there. He'll buy some baked goods. I told her that. So she sent me along with that man. And she felt sorry that she allowed me to go with her because she didn't know the man and she didn't know if I'd ever come back. Anyhow, he took me to a bakery and he asked me what I want to buy. He says, the glass stuff. The glass, you know.
Do you like this?
Do you like that? We didn't have that expression, the glass stuff. we said, "Do hast es lieb or do hast es hold?" I said, "Why, God?" He says, "Du willst das?" I said, "Yeah, anything you show me." I brought a big bag of baked goods. Well, she was happy to see me come back with it.
Did he buy it, or you had money with you?
I had money with me.
So that was your first experience in the bakery?
In a bakery in America.
I bet it tasted good.
It tasted delicious. Yeah. So, from I remember, while I was in Pittsburgh in the depot, there were two Schwarzes, you know, boarders, eating their lunch. I never saw a nigger more in my life. And I stood there and looked at him, and what were they? Were they people, or were they... One offered me a sandwich out of shoes, you know. But I stared at them. Evidently, they didn't mind because they allowed me to stay there and stare at them. Anyhow, we got to Detroit, and there was my father to meet us. It was deep in winter, and it was miserably cold. We left the depot. Heat and snow and it frost, I almost froze. I shivered. I guess I wasn't dressed too warm. I'll never forget. I was finally glad when he brought us to my aunt's house, my aunt Moretzky. Good kid.
This is your mother's brother's wife.
Yeah. And she fixed us the most delicious meal I've ever eaten in my life. And that was hamburgers, you know, for gluttons. Hamburgers and potatoes. But the meat was delicious because I haven't had a decent meal since we left Darlington.
What was your reaction on seeing your father? Did you recognize him?
Yeah. He was a nice looking man. He had a trimmed little whisker. In his younger days, he was nice looking. He wasn't bad looking at any time, you know, but he was a handsome man in his younger days. In fact, you look like him. Yeah. In those days, she'd have a little... You'd resemble him.
So what happened after you got to Detroit to your aunt Goodkin?
That was tragic. He took me to the rabbi, Rabbi Levine. I don't know whatever he told them. They had a discussion. I wasn't party to it. Then the rabbi called me in. And he opened the Gemara. And he says, read. It so happened that he opened the, you know what a Gemara is? Yes. In the Talmud. So that passageway opened up. I read pretty good. And I read one line, another line, then I stumbled at the meaning to that passage. And I looked at the Tosfos, you know, commentary. And that explained the passage, and I told the rabbi what it meant. Because I like that. It's my father. That boy, for his age, is quite good. So he says, if you arrange for him to stay here in Detroit, I'm thinking of starting a yeshiva. And he'll be my first pupil. So, he and the family went to Battle Creek, and I was left behind. The Rebbe arranged a place for me to stay, and he arranged board for me. It was a tough life for a 10-year-old.
Who did you stay with?
I stayed with a Mr. Cohen in a room, but I didn't eat there, you know.
Where did you eat?
Oh, I ate every day a different place. It was a rough life. For 3 years.
You lived that way for 3 years?
I lived that for 3 years.
Did you see your family at all?
Yeah.
Did you see your parents at all during that time?
Very seldom.
They were in Battle Creek?
Yeah.
So what did you learn during that time?
I went to school and I learned afterward.
You were going to public school during that time?
I was going to public school. Then, after I was bar mitzvah, I went to New York. I was sent to the yeshiva in New York. I stayed there a year, and that was it. I refused to stay any longer. I told him, send me back home. I'm tired. I have no interest in learning anymore. I want to go home.
Was there any one thing that made you decide?
Well, it was a combination of things. First of all, I was away from home, and I was homesick.
But you've been away from home since age 10?
Yeah, I was homesick. The older I got, the more homesick I got. And I felt I wasn't cut out to be a rabbi anyhow, because by that time I was already reading socialist literature. And and I lost my deep religious faith anyway.
Were you writing to your father all this time? How were you communicating with him?
Once in a while. My father's letters were illegible almost.
In Yiddish?
In Yiddish.
But he could write. He was
literate. He could write. And, and that wasn't very often. You know, out of sight, out of mind, I guess. More or less. With them.
So did you send your money?
No. Now and then, he'd send a couple of a few dollars, $5. Very seldom.
How did you support yourself? I mean, how did you live?
It was a poor living.
Did he pay for your school?
The yeshiva supported me.
Okay. Did he pay the yeshiva?
No. They paid for my room. And I had to scrounge for food. They had a little dining room in the yeshiva for one meal, and the rest of the time I had to buy.
So you were effectively orphaned from age 10 to
14? That's right. I was actually, I had no home life from 10 on. I had no childhood. That a normal child has, such as games and play, and I have too much responsibility from age 10 on.
Mm-hmm. You were going to English school during the day, in the day, and in the evening you were going to theater?
Till late at night.
Is that the same situation in New York? Or
no, New York was the other way. During the day we learned Hebrew and Gemara, not Hebrew, Gemara and Mishnayos, Tanakh a little. At night we learned the Hebrew, English. We had English school. We had an English teacher. A key teacher. Most of the teacher's time was occupied with the greenhorns, teaching them English. You know, they had European scholars that came to the yeshiva to stay long enough to learn English and finish up their courses, whatever they had to have in order to be ordained, get smithing.
So, when you were 14, you wrote your father and said you had enough, and he sent the money to come back?
No. I came unannounced.
I And you have the money for a ticket.
They bought me the ticket.
Oh,
the yeshiva.
Oh, you told the yeshiva that said I'm
not. I want you to send me home.
Okay.
But they did notify my father.
Okay.
So it was no surprise.
And at that time your parents were living in Battle Creek?
No. They were living in Pontiac.
They had moved to Pontiac?
No, I got to correct that. I think they lived in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Then they moved to Pontiac.
So when you were 14?
Yeah, they lived in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
He had a junk shop in Detroit.
Came
unannounced? Yeah.
You knew where they were living, or you called
them?
Oh,
yeah, them? I did.
By that time, you could speak English?
Oh, sure. 4 years later? Oh, yeah. I could speak English perfectly when I went to New York.
Did you have any contact?
I learned English fast.
Did you have any contact with kids outside of, American kids, or just in the
family? No. How could I? I started off in the first grade, but I kept skipping. They kept promoting me.
So what happened when you got back to your parents? What did you do there?
I went to high school.
At that time? Mm-hmm. In Detroit?
Mm-hmm. Started as a freshman.
Well, in the meantime, during those 4 years that you were away, that's when your other sisters were born?
All three kids were born.
So you got 3 years?
The next 4 years.
You weren't even there when they were born.
No, I wasn't there when any of them were born.
But you were born in Angie?
Angie, Helen, and Nathan and Helen.
They were born while you were either studying in Detroit or in New York.
Yeah.
So you came home, you had three new brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, you know it's 10 after 11?
Oh, we'll take a break here. Okay. Well, when we left off, you told me that you had just come back from New York. You were 14. And you started going to high school there. And you were living back with your parents?
In Detroit.
Yeah. Well, that was 1914, right?
Yeah.
Well, what were those years like?
What?
What were those years like?
Well, they were more or less normal years. I went to school. And my father was in the junkers.
You were living in Detroit at that time?
Mm-hmm.
What were the living conditions like? What kind of homes did you have at that time?
Well, we lived in a cottage. It wasn't a high-class home. It was a normal house or home prevalent in those days. All our neighbors were either in the poverty class or a little above, but they were not too conscious of their economic condition. There's very few of our acquaintances, our neighbors, would be called affluent in those days.
Well, how would you compare it to the house that you grew up in a Lincoln? I mean, did you have plumbing in that house?
In a Lincoln?
No. In a Lincoln, I know you had an outhouse. I'm talking about in Detroit. When you moved back to your family, did you have electricity?
Well, let's see. We didn't have electricity. We had gas.
Gas light?
Gas light. And in the kitchen was a cook stove. We had a parlor stove for heat. That's the way most people had in those days.
Did you have running water?
Well, yes, with a pump in the sink.
What about in Olinka? What? You didn't have gas lighting there.
In Olinka, the conditions were vastly different. In front of our house, we lived on a street facing the village square, big square. And the front of the square is were the better homes belonging to the priest of the Russian Church, the Catholic, and to the teacher and principal of the school, of the Russian school. They were officials of the government, Tsarist government. There was a church located there. Also, on the opposite side from the church was a synagogue where we used to pray. In that square, we had once a year in the spring, we had a fair where itinerant merchants would set up their wagon loads of merchandise. And that was a big day for me, I remember, as a child. Because one of the wagons had a was it had a special kind of cake that they used to sell for a groschen or a penny a piece. And I looked forward to buying that. I remember the street we faced because we lived on was muddy in spring. In the winter, it was very cold and full of snow. In the summer, it was sandy. I didn't mind that.
Well, how did you get light in the house?
We had
candles or kerosene. Or?
We had candles, but the candles were lit only on Friday night. And Saturday night, one candle for the Abdullah. But the rest of the week, we had lamps. Kerosene lamps.
And how did you get water?
That's what I was leading up to when I got sidetracked. On the square was a well, they called a bunim. And everybody drew their water out of that well. It had a bucket leading to the bottom of the well, and you worked a pulley to bring the bucket up and down. Mm-hmm. And get fresh water out of the well.
Did you have any chores that you had to do? Did you have any jobs?
Well, my chore was going to bed.
You didn't have to carry water or anything like that?
No, nothing like that.
Chop wood or
no. We'd buy in the during the early fall we'd buy loads of wood from peasants who used to bring a load of wood and bring it to the square, and whoever needed wood would go and haggle with the peasant and buy it a load of wood. It would be all cut up and ready for the other.
Did you have any contact with the official Russians in this town, with the priest of the Orthodox Church or the Russian schoolmen?
Well, as a youngster, I didn't. The people did. We had a policeman, one officer, who would be drunk most of the time. He'd walk around with a uniform and with a saber, and everybody would kowtow to him. I guess he'd get free drinks.
Did you have to learn Russian?
What?
Did you have to learn Russian?
No. At one time, there was an order that all the cheder kids would have to spend some time in that school. I don't know how old I was. I must have been about six. And I was introduced to the in a class, in a Russian class. I was given the book. I didn't spend too much time there because I think it was changed somehow or other where we didn't have to continue going there. How they did it, I don't know. Probably paid off.
What about your parents? Did they speak Russian while they were in Russia?
No. The Russian language was not used in that area.
Uh-huh. Even the peasants didn't
speak. The people, even the Gentiles, didn't speak Russian. Uh-huh. It's just the official demand. Because the people either spoke Polish or Lithuanian.
They were probably
mostly Polish in our town.
They were probably Roman Catholics.
They were all Roman Catholics. They went to their own church.
Did you have any contact with the Goyim at all?
My father?
With you?
No, I didn't. No, not any kind of contact. My father had to.
Did he speak Polish?
Yeah. He spoke Polish. Good.
But you never learned any?
No. I learned a smattering of words that I quickly forgot when I started learning English. As I learned English, I forgot the Polish.
I remember hearing a story, maybe you told it to me, that your father, in order to avoid serving in the Russian army, cut the tendon of his finger.
That's true.
Could you tell me that story?
I told you that story.
Could you tell it to me again?
Well, when he was reaching military age, I imagine around age 18, he cut the trigger, the tendon of the trigger finger, and bandage the finger so the top half of the knuckle was bent down, the top half of the finger. Let's see, that would be the right trigger finger. And it healed that way. And you never could straighten that finger out. When he was called for service, he showed him his hand with that finger having been mutilated so the finger wouldn't straighten up. They thought that they wouldn't believe his story. So they had him lay his hand down on the table and they pounded with a fist on that finger to straighten it out. And he didn't succeed. He hurt him, but that finger never did straighten out.
Did he ever talk about it?
He told the story how, that's how I know. and for the rest of his life, that finger was bent.
Was that a common practice?
It was common practice to mutilate themselves. This wasn't the common practice. It's too gruesome, I mean, to inflict on yourself. But some cut their tendon with a heel. Damage some one of their senses somehow if they didn't leave the country, escape induction.
How were your parents when they got married? Do you know?
My father was about 21. My mother was about 17. They were young.
How was your father able to do his work? I mean, as a blacksmith,
he didn't interfere in any way with his work. Do anything. You're any normal person.
How did he do it? Did he tell how he did it?
Yeah. He cut it. Cut it deep. And then he bandaged it.
It must have taken a lot of guts to do something.
Yeah.
Wasn't there any kind of prohibition against
what?
Isn't there some kind of prohibition in Jewish law against mutilating yourself?
I don't know.
Or tattooing yourself or something like that?
I doubt it.
But I guess maybe that would be considered an emergency.
That's unusual. But the military service in the Russian army was something that the average Jew dreaded because it was anti-Semitic to start with, and the term of servitude was long, and they'd have to forget about their faith as far as dietary law, and living a normal life. So they, a lot of them who didn't want to serve, did anything they could to avoid serving. My father-in-law served in the army.
Moretsky?
Huh?
Moretsky?
No, not his father.
Oh.
My father-in-law.
Your father-in-law.
Mr. Cole, he did.
He couldn't avoid it?
He couldn't. He served his full term. He served in Asia.
How long was his term?
I don't remember. I think 6 years.
Was that before my mother was born? Obviously it was.
Oh.
When she came here as an infant.
Before all his kids were born.
Before he got married?
I think so. Are you sure?
Did your parents How did your parents get along with your in-laws?
With my in-laws?
Yeah.
Very good,
yeah.
Yeah, they were very sympathetic to each other. They never had much contact with me, you know. They were never in the same town after I got married, or even before, you know. Because when I got married, my folks were in Pontiac.
Well, we're jumping ahead. Just a second. Well, let's go back to when you were a teenager. You were living a normal life, but there were things going on in the world at that time. World War I had started in Europe in 1914. Of course, it didn't affect America until much later.
When did we get in there? About 16, wasn't it?
Well, I think it was 1917 or 1918, something like that.
1918. I think we were already in full blast. It must have been in 17.
I think so.
I was in the Army in 1918. I graduated in 1918. And,
what were your plans at that time?
Huh?
What were your plans? Well, first of all, when you were going to high school, what was your ambition?
My ambition was vague at that time, to tell the truth. I had hoped that maybe I would study medicine. Every Jewish boy wants to be a doctor, or his mother and father wants him to be a doctor. If you can't be a doctor, at least go to college and do something else. Well, I was no exception in that respect. I was hoping I'd be a doctor. I couldn't see my way clear to finance myself, because at that time my folks moved to Pontiac out of town. So I joined the SATC, which was organized with high school graduates to go to college and prepare themselves to be an officer in the Army. So I was provided with board, you know, place to sleep, food, clothes, and some spending money on top of that. But that didn't last too long, because the end of the armistice came in November, and we were mustered out next month. Then I went to work, different jobs. And I studied at night school. I took a law course. I figured if I don't practice law, at least it wouldn't hurt me to have that legal course. I'm glad I did. It wasn't a sacrifice, really, because I enjoyed going to law school. And I managed to play around a bit, plenty, while doing so. Well, I graduated the law and took the bar and passed that in 1923.
Where were your parents at this time? They were, you stayed behind in Detroit?
Detroit. They were in...
And they went on, they moved to Pontiac?
Pontiac.
When did they move to Pontiac?
Must have been about 1918, I'm not quite sure.
What kind of job did you have during those 5 years that you were going to law school?
I worked in a varying different factories, but as an inspector, I had pretty nice jobs. The way factory work is organized. See, I didn't have to operate a machine or do any dirty work. My job consisted in measuring and approving the work coming out of the various machines.
How did you get that kind of job?
Well, while I was still going in high school, there was a shortage of help in factories. So I used to go and get a job Friday, and I'd work Saturday night and Sunday night on the night shift, and then I'd quit. They'd pay me time and a half for Saturday night and double time for Sunday. So I'd collect a pretty good chunk of money. At the same time, I learned my way around, you know. I saw which was, what jobs were paid pretty good, and what jobs were nice to ask for. I found by experience that I could get a job as an inspector where I didn't have to lie that I had pretty good education and I knew how to handle measuring tools, because it wasn't long before I learned how to handle a micrometer, how to read a scale, how to read a blueprint. And once you hire in, they show you around. You know, they introduce you to what you have to do, and they show you what to do. Gradually, I got fired from a couple of jobs after I got hired in, and I worked at it, and I goofed up. They let me go, but I learned what to prevent, what to look for, you know. I remember the first job I goofed up was they put me on a line of drilling machines. And I had to measure the size of the, they gave me a plug gauge, what they call go and no go. A go in that goes into the hole, and no go shouldn't go in. In other words, it's big enough, but not too big. And the guy says to me, go about, go, he says, you don't have to worry about checking my machine. I'm an expert in that. I said, okay, I pay no attention to you. But every so often I'll come and check the holes. Well, I checked and the plug went in all right. But he didn't drill them straight down, you see. He drilled them on a bias. Not very much, not so I could see it. But he goofed up and so did, and I got this, I was responsible. So I learned by experience. I always worked as an inspector, especially after getting experience, and I could give him references. You know, I had no trouble getting a job.
Where were you living during this time that you were going to night school and working?
Did
you live with people, a family? Did you have a room?
I'd have a room. A little difficulty on that.
And you would room with somebody?
Room by myself mostly.
Where would you eat?
Mostly in restaurants.
Did you have a car?
No. No, I didn't feel the need of a car. In those days, it seemed like now. A young man without a car, it would be an oddity. Very few fellas had cars those days. Because everybody lived in the city. And there was all kinds of transit. Buses and street cars. Let alone taxis. And jitneys. Transportation was no problem.
What did you do for relaxation during that time? You indicated that you had a good time despite the fact that you were
going to school. Yeah, I had a good time. I had a boyfriend. We'd go places. We'd go to dance. We'd go out looking for girls.
Did you find?
We'd find. We went to movies. Movies were big in those days.
Did you have any steady girl during that time?
No.
Did No. Did you continue to have much contact with your family? Did they live in Pontiac during that whole time?
Mostly.
How far is Pontiac from Detroit?
25 miles.
Did you go to Town Hall
and all your kids? What, honey?
Town Hall.
Town Hall, yeah. You got a headache?
So Pontiac is 25 miles from Detroit? That's very close.
What?
It's very close to it.
Yeah.
Did you visit pretty often or pretty regularly, or did you just go home for holidays? Or?
I'd go pretty often.
What was your father doing in Pontiac?
He was drunk.
Has his standard of living risen at all during that time?
You mean it was his, we always had a lot of food in the house.
Was he making money? And
he was making a living, making good money, yeah. Doing pretty good. Till 32.
Did he live in Pontiac till he came to Dallas, basically?
Did he live
before he came to Dallas, where did he leave from?
Oh, where did he come from? He lived in Pontiac. But he lived in Battle Creek before that. He lived in Fort Huron before that. He lived in Marine City for a while.
Why was he moving around so much?
Just trying to. He always had an idea that he'd do better in that place he went to.
But he never moved back to Detroit. He never.
From Pontiac?
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
He said the time he lived in Detroit too?
Yeah, just before he went to Dallas.
Okay.
No.
Mom?
Come here. When did he move to Dallas, to Detroit again from Pontiac? Before he went to Dallas?
What? Or your father?
They came and they opened up that grocery on Hamilton.
I don't know what year.